It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hi there, Daniel.
Greetings, Mark.
Hey, kind of a review this week. You're getting into some fundamentals of a loving marriage.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. So I wanted to start off with vulnerability because vulnerability is absolutely essential in marriage. If you're not vulnerable, you're not going to have communication. If you're not vulnerable, you're not going to have intimacy. And vulnerability for a lot of people, I see that as dangerous territory. You know, it's almost like, well, but by being vulnerable, I don't mean being at risk, not as physically at risk. I'm talking about, but certainly emotionally at risk.
Mm-hmm. Let the guard down.
Yeah, and but this is necessary. We have to be vulnerable when we come to Christ. So many of the principles in Scripture, and we read in the New Testament, the fruits of the Spirit, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, meekness, temperance, those things all imply the kind of vulnerability I'm talking about where we don't set ourselves up as the measure, as the plumb line. Christ is the plumb line, and I'm in marriage to be changed, not to change the other person, but I'm in marriage so that God can change me. And so when people get that, enter into marriage in that frame of mind. The other thing I've said, too, about marriage is that marriage is a death experience. Boy, when some people hear that, they go, oh, this guy, you know, it's pretty heavy. But it is. I mean, the husband is required, is told to love. Paul says, love your wife as Christ loved the church and gave himself for the church, laid down his life for the church. And so the men are to lay down their lives for their wives. And so that's being vulnerable. One man said, if I lay down my life for my wife, what keeps her from walking all over me? And I said, well, nothing. If you've given up your rights, I guess she can do that, you know. Mm. So that's, you know, people say, oh, boy, so that's, I don't know if I can do that. And then the wife is, she's admonished to obey your husband as the Lord. And boy, that, you know, so many women, and maybe they're justified in this, but you know, the cockles go up on the, is that the term? The hairs go up on their neck. They get,
or maybe is the word more respect also? Respect your wives, respect your husbands? It's actually obey your husbands.
It's actually obey your husbands.
Mm. Oh, I can see how that would.
Well, but the thing is that if the husband is vulnerable and has laid down his life, then I don't think the wife has any problem at all obeying. But you see, the picture that Paul's painted here is not. And people want to make sermons out of this and say the husband has to do this, but the wife has to do this. If you know, the nuts and bolts to this is they're both required to do the same thing. You're both required to lay down your life, set aside your rights. Marriage is for changing you, not the other person, but for changing you. And this is so this becomes, well, can I trust God to be fair, to be just in this? You know, boy, my husband or my wife, we might say, has got some real faults, and I'm trying to be patient. One man said, I can be patient, but how long do I have to put up with this?
That's kind of, right.
People say funny things.
Well, I was wondering, to me, too, a vulnerability does have to do with accepting those foibles. I feel loved because you know so much of my dirt or so much of my baggage, and you still love me.
Yeah.
But if we're hiding all the time, hiding all of our issues and maybe our past.
Yeah. And another aspect of vulnerability is just putting your all into it. Some people don't want to commit because they're afraid they're going to get make a fool out of themselves. I was talking to somebody earlier about where a couple is just trying to learn to communicate, and she was saying, you know, I feel like I share something that's heartfelt, and then there's no response on the other side. Mm. And so sometimes even sharing is a form of vulnerability. Sometimes listening is a form of vulnerability. So it's the giving of yourself in that relationship. So we've got a number of things that are fundamentals of a loving marriage, but underlying all of them is this this idea of vulnerability. And it looks different ways in different at different times. Admitting my own weaknesses or the places where my wife is stronger in some areas, and letting her take the lead in those areas, sharing responsibility, sharing authority, those kinds of things in the household are also ways of being vulnerable.
So, well, moving on to another fundamental of a loving marriage, liking one another. Now, you've done entire shows about liking.
Right, learning to like.
Learning to like. So, again, review what this means.
Yeah. There are how-tos, and they're not difficult. The difficult part is why we resist. And I guess people resist liking. So we're talking about a couple which, and this can happen in the best of marriages, seasons where you go through periods of time where you really don't like one another for some reason. And I'm not saying that's something that we should just accept, and it's just part of normal married life, because it is a danger sign. And you know, the scripture tells us to be vigilant about the idea of a seed of bitterness sprouting up in our lives, and so we don't want those areas the loss of intimacy, the loss of vulnerability, the loss of affection for one another. We don't want that to those times, and so they happen from time to time. So those are warning. Why do we resist? I guess. Liking the other person sometimes weakens my case. So maybe I feel that I can't trust the other person. And so this narrative begins to grow about the other person's faults and how that they can never do anything right. And so I feed that narrative, and I repeat that narrative, and I behave according to that narrative. I don't question it. I don't fight it. I don't resist it. I don't cast it down, put it down. The Bible talks about putting down, taking thoughts captive and putting down imaginations that are contrary or that exalt themselves against the knowledge of God. And so we don't do that. We encourage the narrative. We live the narrative, and it just kind of grows. And so first thing you know, there's this, we're creating a spouse that we can't love. And we've done a series on that, creating the spouse you can't love. Maybe it feels like I'm giving away some of my power, some of my position. To like that other person is to join them. I don't want to join them. I've decided we have insurmountable differences or irreconcilable differences and those kinds of things. So that's a real problem. And then learning to, when we get past that and we say, you know, it's my responsibility to love this person. And when we learn, when we realize that this is a choice I can make, I don't have to grow this narrative that's dividing us. I can cast that thought down. I can choose a thought. I can look for things to appreciate. I can look for things to honor if I will just agree to do that and trust God and really agree to do that rather than just continuing to rerun the narrative. You know, what's the use? I don't like the person. I don't want to like the person. So,
well, liking sounds to me like just kind of emotional stuff. It's an emotional way, and it's a way our culture operates now. You know, I don't feel it anymore, so I'm going to move on. I would think that that's a lot of what drives the irreconcilable differences excuse that's on most divorce papers.
Yeah, we're choosing a way to look at things, and again, rerunning the narrative. But and the thing that we get to a point where we fail to see that it is a choice that we're making, and we feel like it's like you were suggesting, if I don't feel it, you know, if I feel it, it's real. If I don't feel it, it's not real. But we have power over our emotions. We can question our emotions. We can question our beliefs. which underlie these emotions. And so eventually these unkind behaviors are rooted in emotions which are rooted in beliefs that are untrue. And so that's a part of learning to like, is to go back and questioning those beliefs. Well, maybe we need some help with this too, to do that, because it's not intuitive.
It's not, perhaps. Yeah, it does take time. You say marriage is a death
experience.
A death experience. Yeah. Dying to self. And it's the only way you're going to have any kind of a lengthy marriage. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You are going to go through seasons where you just have to kind of stick it in there, and just commitment is all that's going to keep it together.
It's always learning. We're always learning, and we're always laying down our life. You know, you don't get to the place where you've done that. It's the same in our relationship with God. It's a working out of salvation. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, people, you do a lot of marital counseling, and people maybe have hit a rough patch, and they need to get caught up on some of the fundamentals of a loving marriage. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
The phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also contact me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com, where you can rerun these shows in the podcast.
And you have offices where again?
Kirkland and Edmonds, right?
And they can and they can email you as well.
And I do the virtual as well for people who are lying out a ways, and with traffic and fuel prices going up. So a lot of people find that as an advantage too.
Okay. Back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. Christian marriages are being attacked as never before, from outside and from within. Today more than ever before, you have to be proactive, learning to better be aware, to be more caring, and to be better communicators, recognizing and dealing with problems that are from within, from without, personal or relational. And that's where I can help you. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, Daniel is running through some of the fundamentals of a loving marriage this week. Talked about vulnerability, so important. Also, liking one another. And you've done shows on both these subjects, I think, in your archives, again, at BibleBasedCounselor.com. Moving on to another fundamental, and that is the fundamental of serving.
Right, which is connected, of course. I suppose you could say all these are connected, couldn't you? But it's connected with that liking one another and the vulnerability. Serving is to serve another person is a form of vulnerability, because you're always kind of putting yourself out there, and is the other person's commitment equal to that? You know, one thing we have to realize about marriage is we're growing towards something, and so it's always new territory. In a sense, I mean, we're building on the past, but it's we're always exploring new territory or deepening our affection and those sorts of things. So, the thing serving, we have to realize that when we get married, I think young people contemplating marriage should understand this. I don't know if there's enough emphasis on this, but. Marriage is, I'm getting married to serve that other person, not to be served, but to serve that other person. And if that means I have to set aside a lot of my ambitions and my aspirations, and sometimes that will happen. You're going to go into marriage with some ideas of where you're going and how life is going to be, and then God will change it up. Circumstances will happen, and you'll feel like you're off track. Well, you may be off your track, but you know, we have that Romans 8:28 promise that for those who love God and are called according to His purpose, all things work together for good. And I think that that's so serving that other person, laying my wants and desires aside to serve that other person. We're building an eternal relationship here. Something about marriage is eternal. And, if you're going to raise children, if you're going to participate in the body of Christ, all of these things, you're going to have that serving heart that's cultivated in marriage. So serving to serve is to sacrifice. and again, sacrificing like some of these other things. It feels like giving up.
Yeah, I think a gripe that a lot of women have had, though, is it seems like a lot of that's kind of gone one way, though.
Mm-hmm.
That the wife is the servant to the husband.
Right, and which is a lot of what I do in counseling is leveling the playing field. And I've had – it's not always that way. Sometimes it's the other way around, but it's quite often – because of where our cultures come from. I was talking to a gal the other day, and I said, if civilization started today and moved forward, you'd probably see a reversal of a lot of these trends, because where we are today in our industries, for example, are they're tech-driven. And these are not heavy-lifting industries that require big, brawny men.
Right.
They require intelligent people, and women are extremely intelligent. Mm. Whereas our cultures began with moving boulders and and hunting dinosaur. And so, you know, and that's pretty deep in cultures, and that stuff has hung on. But so a lot of what I do in marriage counseling is to level the playing field and to see both people have to serve.
Yeah, I was watching like a modern update on the Cinderella story or whatever, and the whole emphasis was her Prince Charming was the guy who was going to support her career ambitions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that he was going to come and save the day and be the white guy on the white horse.
Yeah.
Her Prince Charming was going to help her with what she wanted to do with her life. That was her idea of a Prince Charming.
Yeah. Yeah, and I remember one time with a gal divorcing her husband because he wasn't they'd only been married a few months, and she was divorcing him because he had made a career change, and so his income dropped, and so that was he broke his promise, and in her way of thinking, God's intention for marriage was to make her a better person, which meant apparently more of what she wanted to be. And so that wasn't working out. So, but that isn't, you know, that's why I say in the first part of the show that, you know, I think of marriage in some ways as a death experience. It's, you know, when God draws us into the marriage relationship, it's for sacrifice. It's for service to one another. Because unless I can serve this other person, I can't serve God. If I can't serve this person horizontally, I can't serve God. You may think you're serving God, and you don't have to serve others, and you don't have to serve that spouse in that intimate relationship. Interesting where God says he hates divorce. He doesn't want us to divorce. And we say, well, why would you want me in a relationship that's sometimes painful and stressful? And this is because of change, because of the change that needs to take place. Mm. So serving sacrifice is a huge part of that.
Well, another huge part of the fundamentals of marriage is forgiving.
Forgiving.
You've got to do a lot of forgiving in marriage.
Yeah, interesting. Another article that I came across in Psychology Today, and this was one that was typical. I found so much wrong with it, but they were talking about this whole the whole issue was on forgiving yourself, and so I was interested to look through it and say, you know, is my hunch correct about what they're going to say? And indeed it was. Example after example of just lowering the bar, you know, some of the things that you do to forgive yourself are don't hold yourself responsible for so many faults. You're holding yourself too responsible, or reminding yourself that other people make the same mistakes and nobody's perfect. And so this is a way of just lowering the bar. So that's not what forgiveness is about, and particularly in a marriage relationship. It's not about lowering the bar. Forgiveness is about giving. So I say, if you want to understand forgiveness, write out the word forgive and scribble out the F-O-R, and basically that's it. Mm. And in our human experience, there's always a reason why I wouldn't give myself. Mm. I can always think of something about a person. I can always look for something bad in a person. I can find a reason why I shouldn't do this. Or maybe it's just inconvenient. Mm. So in a sense, all giving is forgiving. I'm giving in spite of some obstacle. Oh, going over the obstacle, that's what the four is. It's the like in golfing, you know, we tee off and we yell four, and that's like the, you know, heads up, the ball's coming from high in the sky because I'm trying to get over an obstacle. So that's the F-O-R, that's four, and then giving. And the important part is the giving. So what are we giving? Well, I'm giving myself. And the counterpart of that forgetting, we that English word does not mean amnesia. It means for receiving. We don't use it that way, but that's really what it's talking about. Giving and receiving, forgiving and for receiving. And so we're giving and receiving. And if you're giving and receiving, you're always forgiving and for receiving. And one other thing about forgiveness is that people say, well, they can say a couple things and say, well, I've already forgiven you for that. But the question is, well, have you forgiven? Because what did you give? And of course, we're talking about giving ourselves in this kind of giving. Mm. And so I may have said the word, I forgive you, but if I'm not giving myself, then I'm not, then I have not forgiven. And so it's the giving and receiving. The other thing is that people say, I know I'm forgiven, but I don't feel forgiven. And then they say, well, you have to forgive yourself, which takes us to the article in the Psychology Today about just lowering the bar. You don't forgive yourself. The feeling of forgiveness is relationship. So if I say, I know God's forgiven me, but I don't feel forgiven, then it's, well, that's because you're not pursuing the relationship. If you pursue the relationship, you always feel forgiven. And it's the same in the marriage relationship and forgiving in marriage. If we're pursuing the relationship, the giving and receiving, then we always feel forgiven.
Yeah, obviously forgiveness is the central theme of Christianity as
a
religion.
Yeah.
All the other religions are, you got to work off this and karma, and the reason there's evil in the world or evil in your life or bad things is because you've done something bad in a previous life.
Yeah.
And you can't get off that wheel.
Mm-hmm.
But God says, I forgive you, and that's how we move forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because he's given. He's completely given. He's given totally, Yeah.
Next one, fundamental of a loving marriage is communing.
Communing. So I did an article and a radio show on the triad, the love triad, trust, forgiveness, and communion. Talking to people in marriage that say we want to work on our communication, but in marriage and especially in a Christian marriage, when we say communicate, we're talking about exchanging data. But when we say communing, we're not just talking about exchanging data. So we don't just want to communicate; we want to commune, we want to feel felt. One of the kind of almost a magical thing about this is it's a choice we can make. I can choose to say things in such a way that I'm imparting part of myself in what I'm saying. And so I was talking to a couple earlier today who we were talking about communion, and they were trying to kind of wrap their minds around this. And then the wife said, I think we did that this morning. There was something in the weather. Was a round of thunder and something in the weather. And she said, and both of them were up early, and so they came down into this area where they could look out the window. And they were just in this moment of appreciating this thunderstorm together. And it wasn't that they were talking to one another, but there was a moment when they felt that they were sharing with one another, not just sharing about the storm, but sharing themselves with one another. And the storm was just happened to be the catalyst for that. So the thing about communing is that and I say it's almost magical, is the realization that it's a choice that we can make. I can talk about the weather, I can talk about a house project, I can talk about anything in such a way that I'm actually imparting myself. I use the example of kind of my wife and I have in our most lived-in area at a house, we have like our reading chairs. And so she's got her chair. I've got my chair. We've got our reading lamps, and we're just reading books. But I know she's there, and there's communion going on, even though we're not talking. It would feel odd if one were to get up and go into another room and read the book there. So the other would follow and say, oh, where were you? You know.
Well, interesting for me, too. I mean, I know some people do sleep in separate beds or for whatever reason, but it sure bothers me when my wife hasn't come to bed yet. And I think she's out on the couch for some reason, because I tend to go to bed earlier than she does. And I don't sleep as well because she's not there.
Yeah.
So there's even in sleeping habits, there's something.
So that's a part of communion. And the thing is that if people want to communicate without getting into arguments, they have to lay the foundation of communion. They have to practice through the day the opportunities that we have to make that choice to say things or to behave in such a way that I'm actually offering part of myself to this person. It takes us back to vulnerability. I'm offering part of myself to this person. I'm going to say, pass the salt, or I'm going to say, how was your day, or have a safe trip. But I'm going to say it in such a way that it's an intentional giving of myself to the other person. It sounds a little abstract, but I think most of you have probably experienced it. If you think about it, you say, yeah, that resonates. I recall doing that. And here's the thing is, you have a choice to do it. You could do it many times in the day. And if you do it, your communication is going to improve.
Fundamentals of a Loving Marriage this week. And if people need marital counseling or any other kind of counseling, how do they get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also contact me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Our office is Kirkland Edmonds, and I do a lot of Zoom because of the expense of getting to the office and sometimes the inconvenience of it. And so I think after this pandemic had kind of died down, people figured out that, Zoom kind of works for us too, because we don't have to drive to an appointment.
Sure.
So I do a lot of that too.
People are into that. Mm-hmm. Okay, always great stuff. Sound Mind Broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor here on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.